Epilogue. The next day, Bishop Galbraith walked around the church grounds as usual. Only his slower pace gave any indication that anything out of the ordinary had happened. The bishop stopped when he heard a voice behind him call out,
"Your Excellency!"
He turned to see Philip walking quickly to catch up.
"How's your leg, Your Excellency?"
"Sore, but nothing I can't handle."
"And how's the church doing after everything that happened?"
"Well, I think it wasn't damaged in any of the fighting. In fact, I strongly suspect attendance will be way up for a while."
"Yes, experiences like these tend to bring people to religion."
Bishop Galbraith smiled and said,
"Some of them much more than others. I see some of your friends are flying around the rooftops this morning. They seem awfully busy."
"Yeah, they're trying to repair the damage."
"Making everything as good as if nothing had happened, eh?"
"Better, hopefully. We plan to leave the roofs less leaky and the walls less drafty than they were before. The hope is that in the end, people will feel like they were lucky that their house got broken by a fire-breathing dragon."
"But it doesn't look like you're fixing any carpentry."
"No, I got the hard job. I've spent the last 2 hours talking to Kluge."
"Never a pleasant prospect."
"No, and that's part of why we wizards never properly apologize to him for what happened to him. You remember what I'm talking about?"
"All too well. Did he accept your apology?"
"No, but he is accepting our help. We spoke to the king. The chunk of land where they camp is now deeded to Kluge, and we're going to help them build a house to live in."
"Help them build it? You're not building it for them with your magic?"
"No. We're giving them the materials, the tools, and paying 2 carpenters to supervise them, but they have to build the thing themselves. The thinking is that they'll respect the house more if they have to put some effort into it, and maybe 1 or 2 of them will learn a real trade. At the very least, for a little while they might be too tired to bother menacing anyone."
Galbraith said,
"And perhaps they'll be friendlier once they start sleeping indoors."
Philip said,
"Indeed. They seemed pretty happy about the idea. One of them, Stretch, I think they called him, already has ideas for his dream kitchen."
Bishop Galbraith squinted up into the sky and said,
"Here come some of your friends."
Martin, Gwen, and Britt the Younger soared gracefully through the air and landed in front of Philip and the bishop. Martin asked,
"How'd it go with Kluge?"
Philip said,
"It went well. I just finished telling His Excellency about it. We can discuss the particulars later."
The others took the subtle hint from Philip not to ask any further questions about the Kluge conversation, because he hadn't quite told the bishop the whole story.
"The fact that you're all 3 here leads me to believe that you're ready to go make our final stop,"
Philip continued. The bishop said,
"And I must get back to the church. Philip, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Gwen, good to see you. Martin, good day. Britt, it's wonderful to see you. I do hope you'll stop by the church occasionally. You'll always be welcome."
Thank you, Your Excellency. I'm sorry, I just haven't talked to you that often. I didn't think you really knew my name."
"I didn't,"
the bishop said.
"But I do now. A woman, I'm told, is you in the distant future, and I have become very well acquainted. And I hope that you and I can be good friends as well."
As Bishop Galbraith walked away, back toward the lead church, Britt said,
"I'm not sure I like the sound of that."
Philip said,
"I know I don't."
"So?" Martin asked. "Kluge went for it?"
"Yes,"
Philip said.
"Starting next week, instead of training by fighting fake dragons, we train by fighting Kluge and the bastards." They were dubious at first, but they came around when I told them that we would promise to never hurt them, and that they'd be required to do their absolute best to hurt us any way they could. Is Jeff working on his end?
Gwen said. He and Roy are already done. They just took the original dumb fake dragons, made them look like they're made of metal, stripped out of all of the behavior algorithms, and figured out a firing system for the fire breath. They just stand there like a statue unless someone rides them. Philip said,
Good. Telling them they'd get to use dragons to try to hurt us with was a big part of my sales pitch.
Martin said, I wonder if the bastards will be disappointed.
In what? Britt asked.
The dragons? Martin said. Because they aren't like real dragons?
There are no real dragons, Britt said. There never were. They were all fake, Martin.
I know that. It's just, these dragons are going to be even faker than the ones they're used to. Really, they're a little more than mean-looking flying motorcycles that shoot fire.
Mean-looking flying motorcycles that shoot fire,
Philip said.
Yes, I can see how a gang of toughs would be disappointed in that.
In Honor and Sonny's pasture, the sheep grazed under the watchful eyes of Blackie and Harry. Honor sat, leaned back against a tree with her eyes closed, her left hand in her lap and her right hand listlessly scratching Runt, until a soft male voice said,
Pardon me.
At which point Honor's eyes popped open and she let out a panicked yelp. Philip, Britt, Gwen, and Martin were all standing in the grass in front of her. Philip said,
I'm sorry, I was specifically trying not to startle you.
Honor glared at him and said,
You didn't do very well, did you?
No, I didn't. We stopped by your house looking for you. Your brother told us you were out here.
I am?
Yes. Honor, we are all grateful to you, and quite impressed with what you accomplished. You suffered a terrible loss, stood up for what you knew to be true when all of the adults seemed to be against you, befriended people of whom even we wizards chose to steer clear, and confronted an adversary you had every reason to believe was far more powerful than you.
I wanted my brother back.
Well, we're all very impressed and grateful.
So you say.
Exactly. We've said it. And now we're here to show it with our actions. But first, we do have one question. We're curious how you came to possess the Mego demon figure.
Hubert gave it to me.
Yes, the dung sifter. I thought that might be the case. We must reward him,
Britt said.
We could set him up in another line of work.
Any other line of work?
No, Martin said. He wouldn't go for it. That business is in his blood.
Gwen said,
Then maybe a course of antibiotics and a case of rubber gloves.
Philip cut in.
We can discuss that with Hubert. We're here to reward Honor.
Philip knelt down and pulled out a small leather pouch. He opened the drawstring and showed Honor that it was full of silver coins.
This pouch will refill itself with silver coins once a month, rain or shine, for the rest of your life. You could use it to buy food. There's enough for you and Sonny to just get by, or you could use it to buy more sheep and pay for hands to help you tend them. Play your cards right, and this silver can help you make even more silver on your own. And if it doesn't work out, you still have next month's silver to count on. Also, if you're ever in trouble, stick your hand in the pouch and snap your fingers twice. One of us will show up as soon as possible to help in any way we can.
Honor took the pouch. It felt heavy in her hands. She looked inside, rattled the coins around a bit, then looked at Philip and said,
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
It's very nice.
You deserve no less.
They lapsed into a long silence, during which everyone fidgeted uneasily. Finally, Philip asked,
Do you have any questions, Honor?
Honor thought for a moment, then asked,
Why silver? Why not gold?
I know that right now gold is the more standard currency,
Philip said.
But in the coming years, silver will be much preferable. Trust me.
Honor's expression darkened as Philip said this, then said,
I suppose that's the problem. This is all very nice, but I just don't trust you wizards.
Philip smiled and said,
And until we earn your trust, you shouldn't.
Later that night, 1,500 years earlier, Brit the Younger sat in her living room back in Atlantis, watching a school of fish swim by the window, when the doorbell rang. Nick shouted from the kitchen,
I'll be right there!
Brit hoisted herself up out of her chair.
Don't worry about it, I'll get it.
She looked through the peephole and sagged visibly when she saw Brit the Elder waiting on the doorstep. She opened the door but said nothing. Brit the Elder walked in.
You don't have to act so unhappy to see me. I'm making an effort here. I started knocking like you asked instead of just coming in.
That's your idea of some great concession to my feelings? Knocking? That's just common courtesy when you visit someone in their home.
Brit the Elder sat down in the chair Brit the Younger had just vacated.
You forget. This is my home, too. I lived here longer than you have, then saved it so it would be waiting for you when you showed up.
Brit the Elder looked around the room, then said,
Philip's not here.
No, he's not.
That wasn't a question. I know he's not here because I remember that he wasn't here when Brit the Elder came by to see me the day after the big dragon battle. I wasn't happy to see her.
I bet you weren't.
Anyway, Philip's at his place, right through one of those doors.
She pointed at the two rustic wooden doors set into the pristine glass wall of her living room.
I know. I'm not here for him. I'm here for you.
Okay. What do you want?
To give you the opportunity to ask any questions you might have.
Will you answer them?
Brit the Younger asked.
You won't know until you ask.
Okay. First question.
Why did you and Louisa have devil costumes on hand?
I can't tell you.
Louisa already explained that.
She said that you didn't want to tell me, not that you couldn't.
Yes, well, when I was Brit the Younger, Brit the Elder didn't want to tell me, so now that I'm Brit the Elder, I can't, even if I wanted to, which I don't.
Next question. How did you and Louisa deal with all of those injured people we sent you?
I figure it'll be handy to know when I'm you.
Yes, it would be.
Sadly, I can't tell you that either.
Brit the Younger closed her eyes and let out a long, slow grunt.
If you knew that you weren't going to answer my questions, why did you bother coming over in the first place?
Because that's what Brit the Elder did when I was Brit the Younger. Damn her. This isn't fun for me either, you know? Playing the villain in reenactments of all my most aggravating memories? It's not like I enjoy getting aggravated to create those memories in the first place.
Yes, I know. But we each have our cross to bear.
Speaking of which, the Lead Church apology tour went well, for the most part.
Brit the Younger said,
Yes.
Brit the Elder said,
Again, that wasn't a question.
Of course it wasn't.
My memory is that it all went pretty well. Most people were fairly forgiving, and many of the ones who weren't come around eventually.
Shame about Kluge, though.
Brit the Younger said,
Yeah, well, that's... Wait a second. What do you mean, shame about Kluge?
Just that it's a pity he chose not to cooperate.
Brit the Younger said,
But he did. He agreed to the proposal.
Brit the Elder said,
What?
Yeah. Does he go back on it later?
No, he turned it down at first. It took a year to win him over.
No, he's on board. You remember it differently?
Brit the Elder's eyes widened, but she said nothing.
You do! You remember it differently!
Brit the Younger laughed, then paused, then laughed again, then looked very nervous.
What does this mean?
Brit the Elder stood up and smiled.
It means that I'm messing with you, just like Brit the Elder messed with me when I was you.
Brit the Younger said,
Get out.
That's what I said.
Out, now!
Brit the Elder stepped out of Brit the Younger's quarters. The instant she heard the door shut, her expression changed from her customary look of smug amusement to a most unusual one of alarmed confusion. She teleported back to her home, as walking or flying would have taken too long. Because, for once, Brit the Elder had no time to waste.
This has been an Audible original publishing production of Fight and Flight, Magic 2.0, Book 4. Written by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2017 by Scott Meyer. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.